It wasn't that long ago that you could drive along the Rogue River from Grants Pass to the Medford area and see three different dams on the main stem of the river: Savage Rapids, upstream from Grants Pass at the Jackson-Josephine County line; the City of Gold Hill Dam, which needs no further explanation; and the Gold Ray Dam, just a bit downstream from where Bear Creek joins the Rogue after its journey from Medford and Ashland. All three of those dams are gone now. Those are the obvious stories, but plenty of smaller dams and diversions have been removed from Rogue tributaries, largely to help migrating fish. Let us explore what has happened so far and what's yet to come. Three guests in the studio with me. Bob Hunter is a board member of Water Watch Oregon and the former staff attorney there. Bob, always good to see you on the Exchange. And we have Brian Barr and Alexis Brickner from the Rogue River Watershed Council. Brian Barr, the executive director, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Good morning.
And Alexis Brickner, the project manager. Good to see you here.
Yes, thank you for having us.
So let us start with you, Brian. Tell us what a watershed council is.
So, great. Their watershed council spread all over the state of Oregon. It was an initiative that started back in the 90s with Governor Kitzhaber and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and recognizing that both water quality conditions and habitat quality conditions for predominantly for coho salmon, but really all of our anadromous salmonids that live in western Oregon, weren't doing very well, and regulatory activities probably weren't going to be enough to reverse the trends. And so the idea behind watershed councils was to get communities invested in doing projects that will help get salmon populations to recover.
So more of a bottom-up kind of approach?
A bottom-up approach to, right, exactly. Getting communities invested in something that's really a great amenity that I think probably a lot of us take for granted. You go to other parts of the country and we don't have giant fish swimming around that you can fish for. We have those here in western Oregon, and really none of those populations are doing well up and down the coast of Oregon and into the interior Columbia. Again, getting communities involved in doing stuff that's going to make a difference for those coho and steelhead and Chinook populations.
So, and I have to wonder, Alexis Brickner, what the process is like. I mean, you're managing the projects, but have they been generally devised by people at the local level? Do they come from the people on the Watershed Council, or is there sort of a mixture of sources for ideas what to do next?
There's a lot of local outreach done by the Watershed Council. We also go off a list that was created by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. They have a priority list throughout the state, and then they also have regionalized that list for the Rogue Basin. So we generally work from that list and reach out to the local landowners and the water users that use the diversions and the dams that we're interested in removing or coming up with some alternative to removal and helping them with their irrigation at the same time.
I have to wonder if there are surprises along the way. I mean, if as you explore streams, you realize, oh, here's a diversion we didn't even know about, or this is something that is permitted, but it didn't appear on any map, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes, definitely. I have not been part of the survey work, but I'm sure that there's, even of the current inventory that we know of, I'm sure there's still a lot of barriers out there that we don't know of yet. So,
of the ones you do know, then, I mean, how many different diversions are we talking about on Rogue River tributaries? Say, I don't know, if you have any point in time you can pick from anywhere from 5 to 10 years ago or maybe 1 year ago to now, and what you know about the numbers.
So I'll take that one. There are the overall list is of fish passage barriers. So this is not just dams. Really, we're talking here about dams and culverts that interfere with fish being able to move up and down the river. The list is over 1,000. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife list that Alexis referred to earlier was created back in 2014 had 66 fish passage barriers on it, the vast majority of which were diversion dams. And it's been a couple of months since I've looked at the list. I think there are probably 7 or 8 structures that have been removed from that list. And of course, we're working on a pile. Alexis knows the exact number, but we probably have active at the Rogue River Watershed Council another 10 or so of the structures that are on that list of 66 that we're actively pursuing. Have engaged the landowners and are actively pursuing project development.
You just mentioned a culvert. So is that a common thing too, or just the passage of a tube of water under the road creates an obstacle to fish?
That's exactly it. So I mean, what happens is if the culvert is undersized or improperly positioned when it was put in place, you create a scour at the bottom end of the culvert, and slowly but surely the river lowers in elevation on the downstream side. And it doesn't take too long before the fish are leaping at sort of a waterfall trying to get past that, that culvert.
Something too high for them to get up.
Too high for them to get up to, or the water in the culvert is too skinny for them to swim through.
Let me bring Bob Hunter in here from Waterwatch Oregon, because you've been on this game for a long time as well, and were involved, I know, with some of the larger efforts, like ensuring that Elk Creek Dam, for example, was not finished on a Rogue River tributary and ultimately notched. Are you part of the Watershed Council? Is Waterwatch Oregon part of the Watershed Council, or how do you work with them?
So Waterwatch is independent of the Watershed Councils. However, in the Rogue Basin, basically a large number of restoration groups who work on river restoration have kind of come together in a partnership called the Rogue Basin Partnership. So we try to coordinate efforts and work together in bringing about high priority restoration. And so Waterwatch has some tools and stuff other organizations don't have. So we tend to focus in on those projects that are high priority, but Watershed Councils have not been able to get any traction on.
Why haven't they been able to get any traction from your perspective?
Well, sometimes you basically just have landowners who are unwilling to discuss removing a barrier or for other reasons don't want to see their barrier removed. And in most cases, these barriers, in many cases, they're obsolete and old. They may no longer have water rights associated with them. So there's some legal issues involved in the continued maintenance and existence of these dams. They also almost always fail in terms of meeting current standards for fish passage, and in many cases harm endangered coho salmon. So Waterwatch is able to take a leveraged negotiation approach where we educate the landowners on actually the exposure and liability they have, and what the benefits can be from removing that structure at no cost to them, letting somebody else come in. And if it's still a functioning structure, also finding alternatives to provide the function of that the dam was once providing.
So do you actually threaten lawsuits, or do you just point out that somebody could sue them given the exposure they've got?
We have in some cases gone so far as to actually file litigation, such as on Fielder Dam. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, once people are aware of the total scope of problems and the fact that there are solutions that can meet their needs, we generally end up in a cooperative situation.
We're talking about the undamming of the Rogue River and its many, many tributaries. Bob Hunter is with Waterwatch Oregon. He's a board member and former staff attorney there. And as you heard, the Waterwatch Oregon works in the Rogue Basin Partnership with the Rogue River Watershed Council. Brian Barr is the executive director. Alexis Brickner, the project manager. You can join the conversation on the exchange. I mean, what do you think of the Rogue River and the way it looks now? Do you wish this is something that was happening on a river near you if you don't live in the Rogue Basin? Let's talk about water issues and fish passage. And yes, we can even bring the Klamath River dams into this. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The Fielder Dam was one. Was that one of the ones on Evans Creek?
Yes.
Okay. And so, Alexis Brickner, can you tell us? I mean, it seems like there was a bit of a dust up, but Bob gave us an indication that there was some issue there. Two dams that came out around the same time, I think, on Evans Creek that presented some obstacles just in removing those obstacles, it sounds like.
Yeah, I wasn't around for those removals. Brian led those dam removal projects, so I might let him take that question.
There was a little bit of controversy around Fielder and Weimer. I was the project manager for that particular effort. Waterwatch did a really great job of setting things in motion, getting all the pieces in place. I came in behind and really was just writing contracts and making sure contractors did what they said they were going to do and coordinating with the landowners. There were some tense moments out there at Fielder, but the construction effort went great. And the final report is that right around this time of the year, which was about a month after construction was finished, there were false Chinook salmon spawning in the backyard of the folks that Fielder Dam was located in. So I see that as a huge success. Fish hadn't spawned in that particular location in probably 80 or 90 years prior to 2015. And during the fall of 2016, we have reports of false Chinook salmon in parts of the Evans Creek drainage 10 miles past where they had ever been seen before. So Some of that was due to the fact that we had some pretty good rains the middle of last October, and I think a lot of it was due to the fact that fish didn't have to figure out how to get past those dams during those heavy flow events. They could just cruise upstream easily, and so they got way up Pleasant Creek and up into the West Branch of Evans Creek, and again, places way past where anybody had ever seen a fall Chinook before since they'd been starting surveys. So great success from those projects.
How different is the approach from dam to dam, or obstacle to obstacle? I mean, are you generally want to notch a dam? Do you generally want to, I mean, do you put fish ladders in some places around existing structures? I mean, how different can it be from place to place, Bob Hunter?
Well, every situation is unique. The purpose and function of the dam is unique. Whether it's still in any economic use can make a difference on how you might approach it, how people would be affected by removal. But in most cases, the goal is to, you've got to remember, a lot of these dams have been in over 100 years. They're aging infrastructure, and as most infrastructure, they don't last forever. They become economically and structurally obsolete in many cases, and there may be better alternatives. Some are abandoned, obsolete, dams, and some of them, their function can be better served by maybe a modern pumping station, which we saw at Savage Rapids Dam, where the diversion function was replaced by pumps. So you see a lot of different approaches. I think I want to point out, fish ladders typically don't work really well even when you have state-of-the-art, and they only are working for adult fish. Mm-hmm. Juvenile fish still can't get up. Cutthroat trout still have a hard time navigating ladders. So it's not a – you don't get the full array of benefits by trying to put a ladder in as you do with removal. Plus, it's not permanent. When a dam's removed, you've solved the problem. Fish can now pass freely. With a ladder, it requires ongoing maintenance and costs and expenses, and it's hard to get them to operate effectively in different flow conditions and regulate the water. And in most cases, landowners don't have the either expertise or finances to maintain these ladders. And in many cases, it's fallen back on the state and the taxpayer and ODF&W to try to maintain these ladders, and they don't have the resources to really do a good job as well. So I guess what I'm saying is, ideally, if you can get there, removal provides the best range of benefits.
When we come back to the creation of the watershed councils in the 90s, as you mentioned, Brian Barr, I mean, was it explicitly about dam removals, or was it just about generally improving health of watersheds?
No, it was not specifically about removing dams and helping fish pass. It's really, as Bob just mentioned, with looking at structures, structure by structure, and figuring out how you're going to approach a fish passage improvement project, each watershed council sits down and thinks about, you know, what kind of critters do I have living in this stream? What are the economic drivers in our area? What is impacting those fish populations? And then devising a strategy to address those things that are most threatening in those places. In the case of the Rogue, it's hard to look past fish passage. Like I said before, there's thousands of structures. Some of them are actively being used. Many of them are not. There are lots of road culverts that are problems. And we have challenging environmental conditions. Really, I mean, anybody that was around on early August with the fires and, you know, multiple days of 100 degree heat at a time when river flows are low, all of our native fish populations, especially juvenile salmon, need cold water. You know, that's a bad mixture. We've got fish that need to move around in the system all year round, and those fish are various in size. And so fish passage is a huge, huge, huge issue here. And I think that's why you've seen so much work being done on that in the Rogue. And it's certainly a high priority for the Rogue River Watershed Council to continue.
Fish passage and watershed restoration, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Brian Barr and Alexis Brickner are with the Rogue River Watershed Council. He's executive director. She's project manager. Bob Hunter is with us as well from Waterwatch Oregon. He's a board member, former board president, and former staff attorney as well. You can join the conversation on the Exchange about fish passage issues around the region and how those issues are solved. We're talking to a crew that has a fair amount of experience with this now. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.com. Bob Hunter, can you draw more or less a straight line from, events that happened before the creation of the watershed councils, like the effort to block the completion of Elk Creek Dam in the 1980s, to the efforts that are going on today to remove much smaller obstacles to fish passage?
Well, I think what we had first with the battles over Elk Creek Dam and Savage Rapids Dam spanned about the same time period, mm-hmm. and went on for a long period of time. But I think once agreement was reached on the removal of Savage Rapids Dam, it really changed the thinking on the Rogue. It's like these barriers that have been around a long time, and some of which are like Gold Ray Dam, aren't providing any function whatsoever anymore. We can rethink, and we can actually change what the Rogue River looks like. And I think Elk Creek Dam had a little different thing. It was a partially completed core dam, and in that case, it really never made economic sense. And even to complete it, it made no economic sense.
In fact, the Army Corps of Engineers, this is a Rogue River tributary that comes into the Rogue pretty close to Shady Cove. And the Army Corps of Engineers couldn't make a case for it, but it was essentially forced through by Representative Bob Smith, Senator Mark Hatfield, and other powerful members of Congress?
That's correct. And so there had been, and then construction got halted because of an inadequate environmental impact statement and kind of stalled. And at the same time, the agency really didn't want to complete it because it didn't think it was a worthwhile project. But in any event, through a long series of history, now that dam has been notched, and it's a major spawning tributary and a very important watershed, especially for coho salmon and cutthroat trout and winter steelhead. And so there's 3,000 acres of federal land up there now, which you can do restoration on. There's Rogue River Watershed Council has some projects up there to improve that habitat. But I guess what a point I wanted to make is, with the removal of the main stem dams, we now can focus on the tributaries, which are, even though they're much smaller in size and some of the dams are small, they're very important for spawning salmon and steelhead, and for cutthroat trout and lamprey and other species of fish. And these barriers don't have to be very tall. It doesn't matter if a dam is 30 feet high or 4 feet high. If a fish can't get over it, it's still blocked. And so I think we can really change our focus. And taken in total, I mean, what's happening in the Rogue is really a phenomenal example of river restoration. I mean, it's really one of the most outstanding examples of how you can turn a river around and really increase the conditions for the survival of salmon and steelhead. And I think what we've done is we've added a lot of resiliency to the Rogue River Basin system to continue to support salmon and steelhead in light of climate change and other factors. The Rogue River has become one of our sort of best hopes of maintaining salmon and steelhead in the future, in large part because of all the important restoration work that has gone on.
So with those three dams in the Medford Grants Pass area gone, Gold Hill, Gold Ray, and Savage Rapids, the Rogue flows essentially free from Lost Creek all the way to the Pacific. Is that right, Brian Barr?
That is absolutely correct.
Is it sort of like a domino falling thing, though, that each dam makes the case for the next one easier?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it gets it into the public consciousness that, a couple things. You don't have to have those dams in place, and we can shine a spotlight on the impact that they create to native fish movement. And I think people start getting used to the fact that you can remove these structures, and if they were providing some benefit to somebody somewhere, that benefit can continue without the dam being in place. And I think that's something that came through really clearly with the structure that we just removed on Wagner Creek near Talent, the Beeson-Robeson Diversion Dam, where it wasn't a very difficult case to make to the folks that were, the 19 folks that were irrigating off of that structure, that they had a failing diversion dam. They wanted to keep using the water. It was either going to take a huge fundraising effort on their part to come up with a solution, or they could join up with us and we would help them find the solution, raise the money, implement the project. That's exactly what happened. I think that project finished right around the 1st of October, and coho and steelhead are going to be able to cruise up to an additional 2.5-3 miles of habitat in Wagner Creek this winter as a result.
And Alexis, was that your project? I mean, so what was the patchwork done on that dam? What happened there?
Well, we actually removed the whole dam. Mm-hmm. It was a channel-spanning concrete dam about 16 feet across and about 5.5 feet tall. So it was a complete barrier to juvenile fish year-round. and then a partial impediment to adults migrating up to get to their spawning habitat in the higher reaches of Wagner Creek. So we removed the dam, and we installed a new intake system with a new head gate, and connected that to the current irrigation piping system. And this was set up just a little bit above where the dam had originally been. And we built a rough and channel in the dam. It's about 115, or sorry, in the creek. It's about 115 feet long, and it's strategically placed boulders and compacted stream bed materials that help keep the flow within that reach.
So it's then, a real reshaping of the creek. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And there's some boulders in there that kind of steer the water towards the new intake system. And so in April, when irrigation season starts again, the ditch users will simply just go up to the new headgate and turn the dial and to open it up to receive their irrigation through their ditch for the season. So it's much easier than getting into the freezing cold water in April and putting in their flashboards to build the dams. So.
I noticed the pictures of the flashboards on the website for the Rogue River Watershed Council. We're going to talk more with the folks at the Watershed Council and Bob Hunter from Waterwatch Oregon about the removals of barriers to fish passage in the Rogue River Basin. We have about a minute and a half to a break, and on the way there, I just want to remind you, it is day six of a seven-day fall fund drive here on Jefferson Public Radio. The goal for the entire drive, $200,000. We stand right now between 92 and 93,000. So, yeah, we have more than $100,000 to raise today and tomorrow in order to reach the end of the drive successfully. We will stop the drive at 7:50 p.m. on Wednesday, no matter what the final total is. We are confident, based on past experience, that you, the wonderful listeners of Jefferson Public Radio, will help get us across that finish line successfully. But it takes more pledges. 888-552-6191 to make a pledge by phone from anywhere in our listening area. 1-888-552-6191. You can pledge online at ijpr.org. Later in the hour, we'll talk more about this. We'll thank some more people. We'll come back and talk more about the dam removals and fish barrier removals in the Rogue River Basin with Brian Barr, Bob Hunter, and Alexis Brickner. And we'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Please stay tuned. A36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are in the middle of a discussion about fish passage barriers on the Rogue River. Once upon a time, people built big dams on the Rogue and many of its tributaries. Now the Rogue flows free from Lost Creek Dam north of Shady Cove all the way to the Pacific Ocean, and many tributaries of the Rogue that once had dams and other barriers do not now, or at least the old diversions for irrigation have been modified. Three guests in the studio with me: Bob Hunter from Waterwatch Oregon, board member and former staff attorney from the Rogue River Watershed Council. We have Alexis Brickner, project manager, and Brian Barr, executive director. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. And here is a phone call from Michelle in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
You may have already covered this, and I apologize if I'm, having you repeat something. When a landowner needs to change their diversion, say, from for their irrigation and, from doing a dam, an annual push-up dam, is there some funding available to help with changing, re-engineering the diversion? I understand there is, and how does that work?
All right, that's an excellent question. Thanks for that, Michelle. Let's take that to Alexis Brick. Everybody's pointing at Alexis.
Where's the money?
Yeah, so there's definitely possibility there. We're working up on Salt Creek right now for the removal of several push-up dams up there and basically upgrading the irrigation intake system, building a new intake box with a new headgate, and then putting in some pipes and regrading the ditch. So that's one option. There's also a pumping option. And so there is funding available. We write grants to do the work that that we do. And so if you're interested in discussing further, you know, please give us a call or stop by our office in Central Point. And we could talk about, you know, what your land management goals are, what your diversion situation is, and where we might be able to work together and how.
And that is the Rogue River Watershed Council. Michelle, thanks for the call. Where's your office in Central Point?
It is at 89 Alder Street. It's near the Grange Co-op, just off Highway 99.
Everybody knows where the Grange is in Central Point. That should be easy to find. So give us a sense, Alexis, of what kinds of forces and people and money you can marshal. I mean, like, who are you applying to for grants?
We're applying to some local fisher groups like Middle Rogue Steelheaders and Rogue Fly Fishers. There's the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which is a state agency. There's a couple other options for state funding, such as Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then we also look to some private foundations. We're currently working with the Resources Legacy Fund, which is based out of the Bay Area down in California. And so we work with a mix of private founders or private funders and state and federal funders. And then we work with the state, county, and federal agencies for the permitting process as well, which can take quite a bit of time to complete.
Yeah, if I could just jump in there real quick, Jeff, I want to draw sort of a bright light on Resource Legacy Fund. The great work that really I attribute to Bob getting started on working on and highlighting fish passage work in the Rogue drew the attention of out-of-state foundation to make a really substantial investment in fish passage improvement in the Rogue. That's going to be ongoing for a while. Alexis is here because of the Resources Legacy Fund. They are funding, unlike a lot of folks, they want to fund the people to get the work done, not just the work that gets done. Huge benefit to us, and I really think they're going to help us raise the game even more in the Rogue as it relates to fish passage. Super appreciative to them, and we're super happy to have Alexis on helping us push these projects along.
And what is a push-up dam, Alexis?
A push-up dam is basically where you take a lot of the stream bed material or bring in rocks and build just kind of a rock dam in the stream channel that will divert water into your irrigation system, be it through pipes or through a head gate. Often these the systems have to go through an ODFW fish screen. If any small fish go through the irrigation system, they get pushed back out into the stream, so they don't go out into the fields
And the idea behind them is that they're seasonal. You build them every spring.
Build them every year, yeah.
The winter flows, rework the rock, and then you have to rebuild it the following spring.
Okay, another phone call. Here's Lane in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Brian Barr, Alexis Brickner, and Bob Hunter.
Hello. Yeah, I was born and raised here, and I value the salmon and the fish, and I'm not one of these people that is fond of reservoirs, but I have a heretical thought, and then mine is, that we, with coming climate, more and more of droughts interspaced by torrential flooding, we will need more dams, not less. California is finding now that the water is getting too hot for the salmon. So the salmon are in the same situation as the marmots and the pikas and a lot of us. We need to find cooler areas. I understand that. But when that water comes, and when it comes interspersed by long periods of drought, we'll need to be able to catch it.
All right, so more dams rather than fewer.
You.
Thanks for that, Lane. Appreciate that. Bob Hunter, you want to take that one on?
Yeah, I think first it's important to know that not all dams provide all purposes. Most of the dams we've been talking about are really old diversion dams that are, in some cases, not even performing that function anymore. The dams, for instance, that have been removed on the main stem, none of them were flood control dams or storage facilities or things like that. He makes a good point, though. We are fortunate in the Rogue in that a lot of the water behind Lost Creek Dam was allocated to the fishery. It's really kind of one of the first times in the nation, and only it may be the only time where so much water was actually allocated to fish. And so we're able to, at least in the main stem, control flows and temperature a little bit to benefit fish. The other thing, all these projects that we're working on together, as I said earlier, help increase the resiliency to climate change. By removing a lot of these barriers and tributaries, it allows juvenile fish to move up and down a system. So when things get water starts to drop and diversions lower down, they've got two choices. They either make it to the main stem, or they can go back up upstream more where there's still some cold water refugia for
hiding places for
to rear and stay. So these barriers actually do help, removals help address some of those issues or increase the chances we'll be able to make it. But his point is well taken as far as climate change is changing things.
Has it changed the approaches to any of the projects currently on the drawing board, Alexis Brickner?
I wouldn't say so. Not yet. It's certainly something we're thinking about, allowing or providing access for fish to better habitat in the face of climate change. So getting back up to those higher reaches that have the cooler temperatures. On Wagner Creek, where we removed the Beeson Robeson Dam, it's fed by snowmelt, so that water stays cold almost year-round. So I could see in the future definitely considering the climate change.
Okay, another call before we go. Bill and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alexis, Brian, and Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been concerned about fish ladders and reservoirs for 30 years, and I have to admit I do enjoy reservoirs, but I'm concerned about the fish, of course. And I was wondering, and also we sort of need the reservoirs for electricity, so it's a catch-22, but I always wondered why they couldn't have some kind of elaborate system instead of fish ladders to get the fish above the dams. Is that you have some kind of a system where you have like traps at the bottom of the dam where the fish would swim up to, and they'd swim to some kind of trap that would catch them, and then be a huge container of volume of water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd fill up the same kind of thing on the top of the dam with the water being held back the dam, and the weight of itself would pull this huge tank up with all the fish. You could just dump them over the edge of the dam.
So a fish elevator rather than trap and haul.
Yeah, but you could actually use gravity of the water to make it work.
All right. Well, let's bounce this off the
pulley system.
All right. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate it. Brian, anything like that proposed before? And you mentioned how fish ladders often don't work.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the perpetual motion machine. I think I'm not so sure that would work. It's possible that it could, and certainly something like that would give you some semblance of fish passage. And it might be successful. Similar approaches have been done in lots of places. The fish elevator idea has been done. If you go back to the Midwest, they use lock systems that usually are reserved for barges as a way to move sturgeon or paddlefish, for example, back and forth. All of these systems are prone to some sort of failure, which prevents fish from being able to move upstream. I guess if you're forced to do something like that, it could work in a pinch. But I think a system like that is going to be similar to a ladder, where you're not going to really get the best benefit for fish movement. And frankly, dumping a fish that's used to being in flowing water as a cue to make it move upstream into stagnant water of a reservoir is probably going to be fraught with problems. And all you have to do is go to Deschutes River and look at the Pelton Round Butte project to see results of how difficult it is to get fish to move through reservoirs.
Bob Hunter?
Just taking from what Brian said there, they're never as efficient as free passage. And the other thing, the reservoirs themselves, in many cases, inundate really critical spawning habitat. With the removal of Savage Rapids Dam and Gold Ray Dam, we were able to reclaim approximately 5 miles of main stem spawning area for false Chinook salmon. And immediately after their removal, fish were up there spawning. There's been, I think as Mark Freeman termed, a red revival in these places where we've had over 100 spawning fish above the old Gold Ray Dam site and a couple hundred, almost 200 above the Savage Rapids Dam at 1 year. And so we're getting tremendous production by no longer having those reservoirs there. And those reservoirs also slow the water down. There's increased predation, and it warms the river up. So again, having that reservoir can be a bad thing in the face of climate change too, because it becomes a heat sink and then releases warmer water downstream.
Almost out of time. Alexis Brickner, what's the next project? What's the next removal that you're likely to see, that we're likely to see?
So we're working on Salt Creek with several landowners. That is a tributary to Little Butte Creek. And then we're also working on potentially removing the Smith-Meyer Roper diversion, which is on Ashland Creek, found right here in Ashland, Oregon.
Okay, lots of activity going on to remove barriers to fish passage in the Rogue River Basin. From the Rogue River Watershed Council, we have Alexis Brickner, the project manager, and Brian Barr, the executive director. Bob Hunter is a board member and former staff attorney at WaterWatch Oregon. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Very much appreciate the update on what's going on in the Rogue Basin.